The polls are open. Who will get your vote? Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live at 9, and now never miss a show. Catch our daily podcast on iTunes. Just ahead, a look at the state of the races as Jacksonville voters decide this election day. You can get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, today's book club pick is E.L. Doctorow's classic Ragtime. Our own book club leader, Stacey Goldring, will join us. Plus, new options for free dental care in the city, all of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, turnout is expected to maybe top 40% in the most heated election season in years here in Jacksonville. The polls opened at 7 a.m. this morning as voters decide on races for mayor, sheriff, and city council. This after robust early voting that lasted for 2 weeks. Duval County's Supervisor of Elections, Jerry Holland, is on the line now with his thoughts. Jerry, always great to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
40% turnout today is the number we're expecting, a little higher than what we had originally thought, correct?
Correct. 4 years ago, we were at 37% on the second election, and things are trending a little bit higher. We definitely had as you mentioned, a robust early voting and absentee was up also. So we're hoping that trend continues through Election Day.
And let's talk about the strategies for both parties. The Democrats, particularly in their Souls to the Polls push on Sunday, had robust turnout. They go into this Election Day with about a 5,000 vote advantage. However, the Republican Party traditionally closes that gap as voters go to the polls on the actual day. How do you see turnout on both sides building up throughout the day?
Well, so far we've had close to 15,000 voters vote in the first 2 hours this morning. What we've seen is the margin between Republicans and Democrats being about the same. It's kind of waffled between 5,000 and 5,100. So there really hasn't been an increase or a bump ahead too much from one party or the other. And as you mentioned, Democrats definitely did very well on that Sunday of Souls to the Polls. And the Republicans have really pushed hard on absentee. So between the two of them, they have been fighting hard for their base.
And you've supervised quite a few elections now, Jerry. This one is a particularly interesting race as we have contested contests, very competitive ones, for mayor and sheriff, not to mention some still open city council seats. There's a lot of passion this time around, isn't there?
Oh, I tell you, it really is. And especially, as you said, even in these city council races, you know, district ones as well as at-large ones, are very competitive. They're out there working hard to get voters to go to the polls, and hopefully that'll translate to, again, a good turnout this day.
And anything else people need to know before they go to their precinct to vote? Today you can only vote correct either at the downtown supervisor's office or at your precinct.
That's correct. In downtown, it must be, according to state statute, you must declare an emergency in order to vote absentee downtown. But it is an option if you can't get to your precinct because of some type of an emergency. But on the other hand, what we really want to encourage voters is if your address has changed, please call us to make sure you're going to the correct precinct. Call us at 630-1414 or go to our website at DuvalElections.com, and that way it'll save you a trip to possibly the wrong polling location.
Great advice. He's Supervisor of Elections, Jerry Holland. Jerry, always so appreciate your thoughts. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, as voters head to the polls today, public safety has emerged as a major issue in Jacksonville's super tight mayor's race, with incumbent Mayor Alvin Brown defending his approach to this core function of government. Challenger Lenny Curry has hammered the Brown administration on the issue. In particular, the Curry campaign has pounded the messaging that the mayor cut 147 police officers from the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. That claim was refuted last week by reporter David Bauerlein of the Florida Times-Union. He wrote that the reduction in police actually began in the 2010-11 fiscal year, the final budget year for Mayor John Payton. Now, yesterday, Sheriff John Rutherford called into this program and said the TU got it all wrong. We'll take a listen to his comments in a moment. But first, reporter David Bauerlein joins us in studio with more about the story and this issue in general. David, great to see you.
Thanks, Melissa. Good to be here.
And we'll go to your calls on this election day in just a moment at 549-2937. So this number of 147 police officers has been a recurring campaign theme. Lenny Curry saying that violent crime has spiked under Mayor Brown, and that he hasn't, that he's taken his eye off the ball in terms of public safety. Surely this is something that will resonate with voters, because of course public safety is of great concern to all of us here in Jacksonville. You decided to research the story, and you reported that that number is actually misleading. Can you tell us what your reporting showed?
Right. Well, let me just start by saying, Melissa, I don't really want to be a political analyst today, in the sense that it's election day. Obviously, the political analyst is taking place at the polls as people go to cast their votes. But I did want to talk about the story that we ran last week, the basis for the story, what the documents were, and why we reported what we did. So let me just start with saying that one of the documents comes from the sheriff's office. It's on their website. It's called the Office of the Sheriff Annual Budget Fiscal Year 2014 through 2015. And it's available to anybody who wants to look at it on their website. And basically, as part of that, they do a year-by-year analysis of police officer positions by fiscal year and what they were each fiscal year. And so that was the basis of it. There have been 147 positions cut. Of those positions that were cut, 30 of those positions that were cut took place in the last year of John Payton's term, the fiscal year 2010-2011. Alvin Brown took office. Of the budgets that were enacted during his time in office, 117 police officer positions were cut. It adds up to 147, 30 of them during the last year of John Payton's administration, 117 during Brown's term in office.
And the Brown administration has talked about the fact that the city council also signed off on those cuts as a way, I guess, to sort of spread the ownership of it around. What about that point?
Basically, the two budgets that Brown proposed and which were enacted by city council in the first 2 years of his term, those were approved by city council, signed into law by the mayor. Now, the third year, there is a big difference in terms of the city council and the mayor. It's the year where the mayor made a budget proposal. The city council thought it cut way too deeply into a lot of everyday services.
Right.
They increased the tax rate.
And that opened the door for Lenny Curry to make the claim that the mayor hasn't been robust enough when it comes to public safety. Now, yesterday, Sheriff Rutherford called into the show to refute the refutation, and let's take a listen.
And I'll correct the mayor and the Times Union. They've both gotten it wrong. There were 30 vacancies that I carried that this administration cut their first year in office, and that number creates 147 positions that have been cut since this mayor took office. He could have filled those positions. He could have given me the money to fill those positions, and he did not. And let me say, the mayor has been alleging that, well, the sheriff has a $400 million budget. He can hire 80 officers, and I'm encouraging him to hire 80 officers. The problem is he didn't fund my budget to hire 80 officers. And in a consolidated government, the sheriff does not control his budget. The mayor's office does. There's about $8 million in operating that I can actually control. The other, the other almost $400 million, is committed through things like the pension, the workman's comp, those things that the mayor's office controls, not the sheriff.
Let me jump in. The reporting, you're saying the reporting from the Times Union's David Bauerlein is inaccurate. And I'm just reading from his article. He said the reduction in police officers actually began in the 2010-11 fiscal year, the final budget year of John Payton's term. That's according to a sheriff's office budget document and the city council auditor's office.
But Melissa, those positions were not cut. We began to accumulate vacancies that year, that at the end were cut, at the beginning of the next year were cut by this administration. And my staff has explained that to David Bauerlein multiple times.
What about the last part of his comment?
Well, his staff did not explain that to me multiple times. I mean, the story came out online last Thursday in the print edition last Friday. Days before that, reached out to the sheriff's office, posed the questions, never got an interview or a response. So certainly nobody who from his staff who talked to me about this, and certainly it was not something where it was explained to us or given an explanation from the sheriff's office, and we omitted that from the story.
So you stand by the story.
That's correct.
And we'll go to your calls on the city's elections in just a moment at 549-2937. Several people yesterday as well sent to me an article about this issue that's appeared on another website, Metro Jacksonville. When it comes to the issue of crime in the city, which has emerged as a campaign issue, and I'm quoting from the writer here, the Curry campaign's numbers aren't wrong, but they are selective when they talk about murder, rape, and assault statistics being up. According to their FDLE tables, that's the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the violent crime index is actually at historically low levels. What about that point of view?
Well, there's two different ways to look at the crime.
There's more than one way to look at it, yeah.
Exactly. If you look at total crime, which is violent and nonviolent offenses, then there has been a decrease in crime. If you look at violent crime, there has been an increase in violent crime. So there's neither one's, you know, there's two different ways of looking at that. You can point to one and say crime is down. You can point to the other and say crime is up.
Okay. And let's go to your calls. We want to know who's going to get your vote in the Jacksonville mayor's race, sheriff's race. Even let us know where you're on the city council races. It is election day in Jacksonville. 549-2937 is the number to join the show. Kesho on the west side. Hi, Kesho. Go ahead.
Hi, Kesho. I mean, sorry. I just late morning, no coffee. Anyway, I just wanted to share a comment that I had about the mayor's race. I'm just slightly disappointed in both of our candidates in regards to social causes, especially things the human rights ordinance. I was rooting for Mayor Brown. But then that video came out about him telling one of the protesters for the Human Rights Ordinance that what he was doing was evil. So I just kind of wanted to hear y'all's thoughts on how both of the parties were going to compensate for their perceived lack of compassion towards the LGBT community. Thank you.
Thank you, Kesho. That's emerged as another campaign issue. Public safety, of course, taxes, pension, spending, big issues. But the HRO has been an issue as well. Both Alvin Brown and Lenny Curry have, for the most part during the race, kept quiet about that issue. Several weeks ago, the mayor said he'd order a study to determine if there are instances of discrimination in the city. Lenny Curry told media outlets he didn't see the need to update the human rights ordinance as of right now. That issue, it's not one you've been covering, David, as much, but that issue has come up.
Well, no doubt about it. And I think if you're someone who is looking to cast a vote for a candidate who will have a mandate to do one thing or the other, either absolutely oppose it or absolutely support it, there's not a candidate that you would pick based on their public statements. Neither one has committed to expanding the human rights ordinance for sexual orientation. They both somewhat left open the door to it in the sense of at least saying, yeah, I'm willing to meet about it or I'm doing this study on it. Curry has said at this point that he doesn't see a need for it.
Let's go to Karen in Argyle. Karen, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I've been listening to you for a long time, and I've never called in before, but I'm excited about this race this week, and I'm an Alvin Brown supporter. And I'll tell you one of the reasons is his plans for education, and I'm hoping for some new stuff on his second term. I have six children, three in foster kids and three who are mine. And education is important. And I work in county schools, but I live in Duval. And I'd love to have my kids go to school in Duval, but the schools in the area where I live are not what I want for my kids. So I'm really excited about some of the plans he has for education.
Okay, thanks, Karen. You know, people are motivated by different issues, whether they're pro or anti-HRO, whether they're concerned about crime, whether they don't want to see their taxes raised. It's fascinating to see what motivates people to come out and vote.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think anytime you have an election, one of the big questions is what candidate has a mandate to do what? What have they campaigned on? If elected, what would the voters say? You told me you'd do this. I voted for you. I expect to see that get done.
Yeah, and some people have called this program, said that they will not support the mayor because they were made promises around that human rights ordinance that they didn't feel were followed through on. Anyway, let's go back to your calls. Omar in Springfield. Go ahead, Omar.
Hi, good morning, Melissa. Okay, well, I mean, I just actually left the polls. I voted for Brown. It did take me a minute to come back to that decision after, you know, since the first round. But, you know, it definitely kind of came down for me, to be honest, even with presidential, I think we need a longer term. 4 years is not very long to do anything anymore. So, you know, as far as some of the things that Curry was, I guess his running point. Really, to me, even if they are true, now, then I know the Metro Jacksonville article came out, you know, kind of say it could go either way. But, you know, 4 years isn't long enough to do anything. 4 years is long enough to finish college, and you still don't know what you want to do after that. So, I mean, definitely, you know, I'm excited to see what he's going to do. I'm a big advocate for downtown and Springfield, and he's done a lot to, you know, build the area up and bring a lot more entertainment and things that are going to enhance Jacksonville, you know, as a whole city. So I'm definitely excited to let him continue his mayorship.
Thank you so much, Omar. And we want to hear from Lenny Curry supporters, too. We also want your comments on the sheriff's race. Speaking of which, Sheriff John Rutherford is on the line. Hey, Sheriff Rutherford. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
Well, thanks for calling.
Yes, morning, listen, Hey, good morning, David. Hey, listen, I wanted to say two things. Number one, I stand by the 147 that were cut, and I'll explain that in a moment. But I do need to apologize to David on the comment that I said yesterday that he had that it had been explained to him multiple times by my staff. I thought that they had a verbal communication and I saw the written responses on a printed out copy of his email to my office, which I thought had already been responded to. I thought when I saw it had already been responded to. But the answers had been typed in, but it had not been sent. So I do apologize for that.
I appreciate that, Sheriff. Thank you.
And I always, I'm the first to step up when I misspeak.
Well, thanks for calling in. Let me ask you, I know it's election day and we're deciding some contests today, but there's talk that you're eyeing the seat of Congressman Ron DeSantis, who of course is running for Senate because Marco Rubio is running for president. Can you confirm or deny?
Oh, Melissa, I knew you'd go there.
Of course I'm going there. Come on now.
I am in that seat.
We have confirmation. All right.
Yes, we are looking at putting a team together as we speak.
Well, I certainly hope you can come in and visit us sometime soon and share more about that when you get going.
Absolutely, absolutely. If I could explain to David, and it will be coming in the email that had already been filled out, the 30 positions where you see the 1720 in the left-hand column, it says police. You look to the right-hand column, the far right-hand column, there's an explanation. And you see 10 transferred to cops, Grant, and 20 vacant. And those were vacancies that we had to accumulate over the years. So going into that budget cycle, we had 1,750 positions. Through the year, anticipating, look, I've got a plan in advance. Otherwise, I wind up laying bodies off, which I hated to do. I had to lay 48 off one time. But what I tried to do to prevent from having to lay officers off was anticipate where the budget was going to be in the next year. So we carried those 30 vacancies through that. Well, we accumulated those vacancies through that year. At the beginning of Mayor Brown's first budget, he had the opportunity to fund those positions because they were still authorized positions. He did not fund them. He cut them. So that's how I come up with 147.
All righty.
That's an operating budget.
Thank you, Sheriff Rutherford. He's termed out, of course. We appreciate you calling in. And we'll be hearing from John Rutherford as he, just confirming on this program, he'll be running for the seat being vacated by North Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis. DeSantis squaring off against Patrick Murphy, a South Florida Democrat, for the Senate seat being vacated by Marco Rubio, who is, of course, now running for president. Musical chairs, Game of Thrones, Florida style. Let's go to Zoe on the South Side. Zoe, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey. Well, I just want to say, to be a believer is to be a Democrat, not the other way around. St. Augustine believed that God made religious institutions and government for man. Religious institutions for man's spiritual well-being, government for man's social well-being. The idea that government is evil is an argument from the right based on deep-rooted prejudice that arose from civil rights enactment.
Zoe?
America, our nation, this land is built upon a democracy, not a plutocracy or aristocracy. And let's look at the role of religious institutions and government. Church historically has been known as an institution of oppression and corruption. That's why the separatists and the Puritans boarded the Mayflower to escape religious persecution. Now, Puritans...
Okay, Zoe, thanks for the call. So let me just quickly pivot a minute and talk a little bit about the sheriff's race, because John Rutherford is termed out. We've got two men trying to replace him, Mike Williams and Ken Jefferson. As we've seen, public safety is top of mind for many voters as they look at these two top-of-the-ticket contests, David, for mayor and sheriff. It's going to be fascinating to see how the votes come in tonight.
I think University of North Florida had a poll that was released in March, and it showed that 33% viewed public safety as their number one priority. That topped all others. Now, it's not a majority of the community, but certainly 4 years ago, it would have been the economy, jobs, public safety has moved to the forefront, according to that poll, of what voters we're most concerned about in terms of the city.
In terms of voting and what motivates people. And so it's going to be a long night, I think, for all of us. We look forward to seeing the returns come in. We'll be back here at 7 p.m. tonight with full live coverage of this election. Times Union reporter David Bauerlein, always great to see you. And thanks for joining us this morning with your thoughts.
Thanks, Melissa. Appreciate it.
Much more still ahead later, a preview of one special event coming up this Memorial Day. Also, we'll tell you about a new clinic, free dental care for adults in the city. But up next, it's time to go back to the ragtime era. That's in our book club. Back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
This summer, WJCT will introduce several new programs to our weekend schedule. We want your help deciding which new shows come to the First Coast. Starting May 10th, tune in Sundays at 1 o'clock for a special preview of The Moth Radio Hour, Snap Judgment, Wits, and Studio 360. Help us decide what you hear on 89.9. Get more information at wjct.org/weekends.
How does mental illness affect a person's work, school, or family environment? WJCT's First Coast Forum will focus on barriers to getting treatment. A panel of mental health practitioners and advocates will discuss the obstacles people with mental illness face. First Coast Forum, Breaking Through Stigma, a conversation about mental health. Thursday, May 28th at 8 on WJCT Public Television and 89.9 FM.
Morning Edition is awake around the clock to bring you the latest news.
It's 2:10 in the morning, so still 5 hours left.
The hosts are usually here around 3:30.
You have Ophibia at 4, and it's about the Boko Haram ISIS news over the weekend.
Crunch time is 4 a.m.
until 5 when the show starts.
Hit it. Open.
Good morning, I'm David Green. With
Morning Edition. Up all night to bring you all you need to know. Listen every weekday.
Weekday mornings starting at 5 on 89.9.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, it's an American classic written by a master of contemporary fiction. Ragtime by E.L. Doctorow was, of course, set in the early 1900s, but the book's themes ring eerily true today. In the story, Doctorow weaves real and fictional characters into a complex tale that questions the very definition of the word history. Ragtime is our focus in today's First Coast Connect Book Club. Our leader, Stacey Goldring, is here now to lead the discussion. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, and it's great to see you, and I'm so glad you picked Ragtime. And by the way, the Jacksonville Public Library is partnering with us on this book club segment that we do. They will have extra copies of Ragtime available for readers that want to be part of our book club. So, Ragtime, and I'm looking here at a list that lists Ragtime as one of the 100 best English language novels of the 20th century.
Well, only quality for us, correct?
That's right. That's correct.
So what's the takeaway? Because we never have enough time, Melissa. I want people leaving the program today knowing two things. If you adapt, you survive. And I want people to question the definition of history. What is history? Because this is what Doctorow does. He is magnificent in this book. What he does with Ragtime is he takes two families by these names that are generic, mother, father, and a little brother, and then he has another family, Tata, daughter. This is the immigrant family versus the WASP family. And then he melds in all these real characters. And what he does is he says, how do these people, these two classes of people, react when these real life events happen? Now, when I've talked about this book with other people, they want to know who's real and who's not. So I have compiled on the website, chapterendnotes.com.
Chapterendnotes.com.
That's right. I know it's not the best title, but it works. Okay. I have a 30-page in real time guide. Here it is, little reference guide. So if you want to read Ragtime again, you can refer to this. It's on the website, but you can follow along with my reference, who's who. Okay. Now, there's a very important character in this book. His name is Coalhouse Walker. This is a character that has a name. However, he is not real. But what he represents is that friction at the turn of the century where here is change. What are we going to do about it? What are you going to do? So what we have is we have J.P. Morgan and the robber barons. We have Ford, who created the car. And once you had the car, all bets were out, you know, because now you can leave the family. Now you can go and cut your hair and wear a flapper outfit and, you know, be in the rumble seat. Then you have the women's movement. We have Emma Goldman, who's representing change, the progressive era. We have Houdini, who wants to break all social caste systems. He wants to escape. And then how does the establishment react to these things? This is where we have the beginnings of the fundamentalist movement, because they want to go back to the fundamentals, because we have all these Marxists and socialists coming over here and they're causing problems. The story is told by younger brother. He looks back as an adult. Here's a little excerpt from the beginning. Patriotism was a reliable sentiment in the early 1900s. Teddy Roosevelt was president. The population customarily gathered in great numbers, either out of doors for parades, public concerts, fish fries, etc. Trains and steamers and trolleys moved them from place to place. That was the style. That was the way people lived. Women were stouter then. They visited the fleet carrying white parasols. Everyone wore white in summer. There was a lot of sexual fainting. There were no Negroes. There were no immigrants. So this is younger brother as an adult looking back and parroting this fantasy memory of an earlier time. And what he does throughout the book is say, you know what? It really wasn't that way. It was pretty raw and awful. And this is the story of what has happened.
And so how do you see the themes of Ragtime a century later coming right back to the forefront in 2015 America?
crazy, crazy, same thing, different day. We have a group. We have Cole House Walker, who is a black man who breaks all cultural barriers. He is a fabulous ragtime musician, and his car is vandalized in a white neighborhood in New Rochelle, New York. And he wants his car back. He wants his car replaced, and he wants his car returned to him. And he struggles working within the system. And when he doesn't, when he isn't able to get satisfaction and get his car back, it was vandalized by an Irish police at an Irish police fire station. He chooses to break the law. So as I'm reading this book and watching what's happening in Baltimore and P.S. what has happened in Ferguson, I'm thinking that Doctorow gives us an opportunity through fiction to try to understand what's going on in the world around us. And this is the beauty of literature. Here is a place to come together in a book group, use the book as a launching pad for what's happening in society today. And the conversations I've had are very interesting.
Yeah, what do people say when you lead a book group on ragtime?
Well, first of all, they want to know, did this Cole House Walker, is this, did he make the right decision? Should you be a victim? Or should you try to work within the system? There is a character in the book who's real. His name is Booker T. Washington. And he goes to Cole House while Cole House has taken the Morgan Library. He has gone ahead and planted bombs everywhere because he's going to blow it up in order to get his car back. And he says, please work within the system. Please. And Cole House makes a decision. I'm not going to blow it for y'all. I want you to read the book. But what Doctorow does is he uses ragged time. What he does is he takes events that may have happened in the near future, the movement to get civil rights, etc., that didn't happen until the 60s, and he applies them to 1906. But the thing is, what our author does is say, you know what, I want you to think about history this way. I want you to question everything. Because history, to Doctorow, is patently fictional, okay? All bets are off. Historical canons are not used. He says that the author's job is to fill in the blanks that history leaves out. So our younger brother, our character, he likes to collect things out of the trash at home because that's how he puts together and tries to piece together the world.
So the old trope that history is written by the winners, I guess, applies here in a new way.
Exactly. Question that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Question the official version of events.
Yes. Whether happening now on the radio program or if it happened back in the early turn of the century. He says that history is the music of what happened. The events that actually took place. History is not the same history as it is received in the present from what historians have recorded and we learned in our 11th century AP history class. Question it because it's not necessarily true. I had some interesting emails.
Oh, let's hear them.
I had an email from Martha, and Martha said, you know, I saw the movie first.
Elizabeth McGovern, of course, plays the socialite Evelyn Nesbit in the movie version. Evelyn Nesbit was a real person. She
Absolutely.
Existed.
She was the Gibson girl.
She was the Gibson girl. And so when people watch the film, they'll just be blown away by a young Elizabeth McGovern and her beauty and her charisma. She's 18 or something in that movie. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, so what Martha wants to know, you know, you're reading a book, but you've seen the movie first. Does that color your issue? Does that color
your experience?
Yeah. So for her, it did. It did because she felt like she was reading a transcript.
Huh.
And Doctorow wanted nothing to do with that movie.
Is that right?
And that happens a lot with authors. However, Martha enjoyed the book so much that she checked out another Doctorow that she said she's reading and enjoying. So that's great. When you find an author that you like, then you have a whole library open to you. And that, thanks to the Jax Public Library, we literally do have several libraries open to us. I also had a wonderful email from Sam who asked if Cole House Walker was a tragic hero. So just mini history lesson or literary lesson. A tragic hero, this definition was established by Aristotle, and a tragic hero is someone who makes a judgment error that inevitably leads to their own destruction.
Yeah.
And that makes a good story. Don't we love when someone falls from grace? We love that.
We especially in America, we love the redemption story of the tragic hero who falls and then claws his way back undergoing a period of humiliation and reflection. Right.
And we have a little bit of that shading for it, just a little like...
Right. Right.
And then we see them, like you said, claw their way back. So that's really the beauty of Dr. Oat. He hits it every single time. He doesn't miss a beat. The themes of back then, where we were worried about the immigrant population, especially at this time, we're dealing with an Irish Catholic immigration. And we find that today, we're worried about immigrants, aren't we?
We
are so threatened. And when people don't work within the system, you see that what happens is we become very divided, extremely divided.
Let me jump in, because there's so much interest in your wonderful book club and the partnership with the public library. We want to talk about quickly an announcement you have about a new community-wide reading opportunity.
I certainly do. I want to talk to you about a new book group that I'm launching called The Banned Book Club. Now, the book club isn't banned, but the books we'll read are going to be banned.
They've all been banned books.
Yes, they've all been banned books, or they're by banned authors. And what you need to do is go to our Facebook page. People that know me will be floored that I mentioned that word, Facebook. It's not mine. It's the Banned Jacks Facebook page. And I want to know what your favorite banned book is. You can go to the ALA, American Library Association, website, and they will list all the banned books, which includes Charlotte's Web, Tropic of Cancer, Tropic of Capricorn, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. We'll talk about Judy Blume in a second. But anyway, what I want to do is get some input about how you want this banned book to go, how you visualize this book club. And we're going to list details then on the website of where we'll meet, what the title will be. We'll have a little organizational meeting. And trust me, you got to trust me, it's going to be wonderful.
And that's Banned Jacks. Like them on Facebook.
That's right.
And by the way, Stacy wants you to email us here at the book club if you have any feedback about her books. That address is bookclub@wjct.org.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's right.
So it's always great to see you. And thanks. And we can't say it enough. Thanks to the library for the partnership on our first Coast Connect book club.
Absolutely.
And we're back in a moment.
Join us for the radio variety show that celebrates the culture, art, and history of Northeast Florida.
Wake up in the morning.
Swamp Radio features musicians, poets, playwrights, and interviews that tell the unique story of our home.
My idea was to take them to the epicenter of Southern cooking, the Waffle House.
What you do best is most everything.
Swamp Radio, Friday evening at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
New name, new look, great information. Join us for our annual Women's Health Conference, Girls Day Out, August 15th, Hyatt Regency Hotel. Good for You is a day of celebrating women's health planned just for you. Great speakers, great food, health screenings, and so much more. Hosted by Baptist Health and WJCT. For a complete list of speakers or to purchase your tickets, log on to WJCT/goodforyou.
Welcome back. Well, the recent scandal involving Jacksonville pediatric dentist Howard Schneider really shocked the community. Schneider primarily worked with low-income kids, and he's accused of abusing those children in allegations that go back decades. His office recently closed after weeks of protests by parents. Sad story, but the deeper issue arising out of that whole tale is a reminder that many people in our area simply can't afford the cost of dental care. That's where the new Healing Hands Clinic comes in, a new and the only free dental clinic for low-income adults here in Duval County. Operations manager Bernice Morris and Matthew Garman, who coordinated the building program for Healing Hands, join us now, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Bernice, let's begin with you. This is the only free clinic for dental care in Duval County. How did this all come about?
Well, Community Health Outreach has been around since 1988, and they started with helping the community. They first started with medical, and then they realized there's a big dental issue, and we wanted to raise the awareness that medical and dental come hand in hand. So a few years ago, they started doing medical dental care. And First Coast News and the Haskell Company and the Rotary decided we needed an actual building so that we can attend to all these people. We have 300 people on our waiting list right now waiting for emergency dental care.
Yeah, Matthew, kudos to the Haskell Company, Rotary Club, the Weaver Family Fund, First Coast News, stepping up because, as Bernice said, there's a huge demand for this type of medical care.
There was a huge need, and we noticed that right off the bat that they had a small clinic. They had a small house that they actually renovated into this clinic, and the need was so great. But they were unable to be as efficient as possible because of the facilities. We were able to quickly bring on a lot of key partners, and there was a lot of support throughout the community that helped us build a new 6,500-square-foot clinic.
And so this is free. How can people find out if they can get in for services? They need to put their name on the list first of all, right?
Yes, they can either go to our website, chojax.org, or they can come by the facility, 5126 Timaquana Road. They need to fill out an application, and we ask for either proof of income or, for those not working, a notarized letter, just so that we know that they qualify for the services. Once they give us that information, we go ahead and put them on the waiting list.
Okay. And again, that website is chojax.org. And Matthew, local dentists and doctors are donating their time to make this work, aren't they?
They are. And we've had a lot of great support, and a lot of the dentists have shared their just love of being a part of this project. And we, with this new clinic, there's plenty of more space and plenty of more opportunities. So we're looking for additional doctors and dentists to come and volunteer.
And let me ask you as well, Bernice, with the advent of the Affordable Care Act to get more people covered with low-cost insurance, even with that, this clinic opening is proof positive that there are still plenty of people who have unmet health care needs in our community.
Yes, there's a lot of people who fall in the cracks between not being able to get Medicaid, which is a free program, or private insurance. Those Affordable Care Acts are pretty expensive for some of these people working at lower income job levels, and they can't afford the premiums or the deductibles to pay to get these services done. So we help those that are falling between the cracks that can't get either.
Yeah, and up to 20,000 patients you're hoping to see per year, correct?
In the new facility, correct.
Yeah, that's a pretty heavy patient load.
Absolutely. The waiting list was one of the selling points that we got so many partners to come on board with us to build this new clinic as well. So
That's quite striking that even with insurance now supposedly being more affordable, there are still so many people that can't get insurance or just don't feel they can afford to buy the insurance, even if it's being made available at a lower premium.
Yes, there are people below 200% poverty level, which are living paycheck to paycheck. So for them to even come up with $100, $200, $300 a month to pay for this insurance, it's too much for them. And then a lot of them end up not taking the Affordable Care Act and not taking care of themselves. So we want to help those people who can't do that.
Yeah, and dental care, people tend to slough that off. It's pretty important. If you get gum disease, that puts you at greater risk for heart disease and other problems.
Absolutely, and most people, if they don't have their insurance, they'll go to the emergency care, and that's taking resources that we should be using for other means.
Right. So again, this is big news. It's the only free dental clinic in Duval County. The Healing Hands Clinic, open to all low-income adults. Already a long waiting list. Get your name on the list if you need this. Go to chojax.org. The new clinic at 5126 Timaquana Road in Jacksonville. Bernice Morris, Matthew Garman, both joining us to tell us all about it. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
Melissa. Thank you for having us.
All right. And Finally, this hour, Memorial Day is just around the corner. One special event to mark the occasion is the 2015 Memorial Day Light Festival at Yacht Basin Park. This is a stunning scene as participants memorialize loved ones with floating illuminated lanterns. Anyone who saw the Disney movie Tangled, as of course I did with my two daughters, knows what this looks like. Organizer Keith Marks is here now with a preview. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
How'd this all come about?
I partnered with somebody, a woman by the name of Amy Moore, who used to work at FSCJ, and she had visited Hawaii where there's a similar festival where they actually launch these little balloons. They fly up into the air. And it was a way of memorializing not just veterans, but anybody who had lost somebody. And she came back after seeing it, said, I want to start it. And so we partnered and we did it last year.
I know it seems a little silly, but the first image I thought that came to my mind when you told me about this was that scene in the movie Tangled when all the lanterns go up in the air. It's gorgeous to see that in any setting.
That was the beginning of the idea.
It came from the movie.
Well, no, it came from the idea of what happens in Hawaii when they do on this Memorial Day.
So this is at Yacht Basin Park, St. John's Avenue, in Riverside, Avondale.
Yeah, exactly. So the idea is if people are going to come and just write the names of loved ones or prayers that they have onto these sheets of paper that go over the lanterns, and then we light the lanterns and then we launch them into the little canal there, and we have stand-up paddleboarders and kayakers who are there to make sure that nothing falls into the river and no waste happens. So we were pretty successful last year. We had about 5 to 7 kayakers last year, and we had about 80 people show up in attendance, and it was pretty emotional and moving.
It's nice because Memorial Day's origins, of course, were to remember those who died on the battlefield, but this is a nice way to expand it even beyond that, deserve a tribute, just to remember loved ones.
That's exactly the point. We just want to expand and hold space for anybody who's lost anyone and wants to give them honor.
What all goes into the making of the lanterns? Have you had any mishaps, or does it go off without a hitch?
No, it's usually pretty good. There's a piece of paper that we buy them as kits, and so the paper comes, and we use special markers that they come with, and then we put the paper over the wooden frames, and then we launch them, and you know, sometimes last year the water was a little choppy, and we lost one or two, but the kayakers were there to pull them out of the water, and it was a beautiful festival.
I've never been to Yacht Basin Park. Where exactly is it?
It's where Willow Branch Park. There's a canal that runs through the park.
Right.
It's where the canal enters into the river. So we're not actually launching into the river. We're actually just in that small little canal area. So the water is pretty shallow. So it's pretty easy to maintain and control. And there, Kate Rue, who did the new South Bank Riverwalk, there's a beautiful gazebo there that she tiled, and it's a cute little park.
Those canals in Riverside Avondale actually have little balustrades where people used to dock their boats. I've seen them as I've walked along there, I think especially on Willow Branch.
Yeah, that's why one of the reasons we chose it is because we can get kayaks into the river pretty easy right there. There's a lot, two launch spots. It's a beautiful little park, and a lot of people don't even realize it. And so when they drive by it, they walk by it, but they never really come into the park and see it. So,
and this is all happening Monday night, Memorial Day, 6 o'clock.
Monday around 6. And then sunset will start, you know, from 6 to sunset, we'll just be hanging out, writing the names. And then sunset will come, we'll launch.
This is a different way to enjoy Memorial Day, and kudos to you for thinking of it.
Yeah, well, Amy Moore is really the brains of the operation. So,
again, it's the 2015 Memorial Day Light Festival at Yacht Basin Park along St. John's Avenue, Monday night. Keith Marks, thanks for being with us, and have a great holiday.
Thank you very much.
And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. The show's producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Have questions or comments about First Coast Connect? Emails, go to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our daily podcast. It's now up on iTunes. Next on Diane Rehm, police have charged an estimated 170 people in connection with last Sunday's shootout in Waco, Texas. After a fight between rival motorcycle gangs left 9 dead and 18 injured, Diane has an update on the investigation and the history of outlaw biker culture. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be in studio tonight at 7 p.m. for full election results across Duval County and analysis at 9 a.m. Wednesday morning. If you haven't voted yet today, don't forget, get out to the polls and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.